You're listening to Brand Enabled, the human stories behind branding. This is the place to gain greater insight into the human side of branding. Join Gabriel Cohen as he sits down with branding experts, sharing real-life stories of how they faced complex issues along their journey. Learn how others are dealing with maximizing the power of brand and get valuable advice straight from your peers. Here's your host, Gabriel Cohen.
Today's episode is a very international episode, a very European episode. I'm joined by FX Riodo, who is the CMO of North America for Capgemini. Welcome, FX.
Hi, Gabriel. So thank you for having me on the podcast.
So give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself. You're a Frenchman that's in New York. How did you get there?
Yeah, it's been a long path to New York, actually. Thank you for asking. Yeah, so I'm indeed French. FX stands for François-Xavier. It's been my personal branding to turn it into FX for some of our international colleagues and friends to be able to address me without struggling with the pronunciation. I grew up in France in a very, very small town that I don't think anybody will know, but I really was eager to have a global career, and that's why I studied in different areas around the world. My first job and my first assignment was at Capgemini, actually in North America, here in New York, about 12 years ago. I was working on social media and digital marketing back when it was really kind of booming and starting, using as the only skill the fact that I was a digital native when some of the other marketers were not. After that, I moved to our headquarters in Paris, working on a transformation project that wanted to turn our key salespeople into brand ambassadors on social media at the moment that we were starting to talk around social selling. That was a really interesting experience very early on in my career. You know, we built a team in India. I was going back and forth to the country. That was a really cool assignment. And about 9 years ago, I think the first really kind of transformational in my career opportunity happened is Capgemini decided to commit to Asia Pacific and create Asia Pacific entity. And as part of their nominated Luc-François Salvador to lead that entity into its next stage of growth, I met Luc-François Salvador casually in headquarters and pitched myself for a job, and it worked. So that's how I joined this newly created entity, which boomed and was an amazing growth platform for me and for the company, and lasted for 7 years there based in Hong Kong before the assignment that I'm in right now.
And talk a bit about the assignment right now that you're in.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm working for Capgemini Invent, which is an ecosystem of agency within the Capgemini group that look after essentially strategy, transformation consulting, innovation, product development design, and also key R&D solution around complex engineering solutions. So basically what we like to call at Capgemini the tip of the spear. So essentially being able to create the strategies and the conversation that are going to be transformational for the entire organization that we work with as clients. My work at the moment, the chief marketing officer of Capgemini Invent, is to essentially bring this agency into its next stage of growth here in North America. We see such as Frog, which is a very famous design firm, and Synapse, which is IoT R&D agency. And so we are putting everyone under one roof to make sure that we help Capgemini differentiate and tell the end-to-end story to its customers.
Yeah, I'm going to be talking a lot about today about brand and marketing within the realm of professional services. And probably a lot of people who are listening to this are probably going to be very aware of the McKinsey's and BCG's and the Big Four, the Deloitte's and PwC's. I know Capgem a lot because of the European background, but maybe just talk for a moment about like where does Capgemini fit within that world of professional services?
Yeah, well, so Capgemini was founded about a little bit more now than 50 years ago in Grenoble. So that's a French headquartered company, which grew global really fast. I think it used to be very specialized around being an IT solutions, IT service provider, and grew really quickly, basically building knowledge in this area, building capabilities, and then extending in different geographies, sometimes organic or through acquisition. In the last about 10 to 12 years ago, Capgemini, you know, started taking the path of becoming a true transformative partner for our customers, was eager to tell the full, consistent, technology-enabled transformation story to their customers. And in becoming a partner really meant starting being able to not only provide IT solutions and IT services, but also being able to craft the strategies, the new customer experience, the new ways to manage and operationalize your enterprise, how to roll out an intelligent industry and these kind of things for their customers. And that's been the transformation of the group in this direction.
If you look across all these professional services companies, everyone's gone through some mode of transformation. I can't think of another category where if you named almost the top 20 in that category, every single one has gone through a major brand repositioning and refresh because of the evolution changes. I can't actually think of one that hasn't. So maybe talk a bit about, you described a bit about sort of the evolution of the business strategy. What was that from to then from a brand stamp? What was the brand process like?
I mean, we like to say that we want to be positioned as a business and technology transformation partner. So that really means to be able to have a conversation with the customers around their strategic direction and the transformation that need to enable that strategic direction. For us in marketing and communication, that has gone through a several number of major evolution over the last 5 years. The first one of this evolution is there's been a very big refresh of our visual identity, including our logo about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. If you look at it, something a little bit passé, old-fashioned, that was very much focused on in the logo, there was Capgemini, and then there was capabilities that Capgemini was working on, to something a lot more creative, playful. Our colors is the blue, and we played around the renewal of the blue. So that was a major transformation for us and a major evolution. And then the second piece is the publication of a new brand promise, which is aligned to that idea of being more strategic and working hand in hand with the customers on their transformation, which is get the future you want. So I personally really, really like this brand promise because it's active promise into the market and really encourage our customers to challenge themselves, but also look into things such as the society impact, sustainability, and others. And the reason why it's a very interesting promise to the market is also because it has an internal element of it, right? Capgemini is a massive organization of more than 350,000 people, and encouraging people to get the future you want, joining the organization is particularly important. For professional services firm, as you mentioned before, the ability to have all of those people being our advocate, share our message on social media, get into a company with which they share the purpose, they share the vision, and they feel that it's going to help them get the future you want, is the first way that you can translate your brand promise to real action. And I think that's the way that worked well.
Yeah, I think professional services branding, more than any other category, has really been able to do brand well in the context of being able to have very clear external and internal articulation. Oftentimes you end up having conversations about, look, there isn't a separate employer brand, or there's just one brand. Obviously, you then tailor the message. Yeah. But I think you look across a lot of the big professional services brands, they do a really, really good job of getting to that brand promise that can work both ways. Take us under the hood in the process, because I think on the flip side, the challenge a lot of times when you do any type of brand work in professional services is it's hard enough already in any industry that you're working in when you're going through brand work to not have everyone else give an opinion. Because when it comes to brand and marketing, what we hear often is everyone has an opinion on what we're doing. But then when you're working with very smart people who are consultative in nature, then everybody has an opinion, especially when you start getting subjective things like the identity refresh or why get the future you want is the right positioning as opposed to something else. Take us under the hood a little bit. Like, did those types of conversations happen? How did you deal with those? Did you have to go backwards to go forwards?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what I found interesting as part of the creative process that our brand team globally led is they really made an effort to create a connection between, you know, the core identity of the company and this new logo and the new visual identity, for instance, when we refreshed it. But I'll give you an example. Our company, as I said, was founded about more than 50 years ago by Serge Kampf. And there's really a figure of the founder here at Capgemini. He was very attached to Serge Kampf. And his family was very much involved in the process and the creative process around picking what the next visual identity could look like. It's a handwriting logo, right? At the moment, Capgemini, that handwriting is the handwriting of Serge Kampf himself. So that's him. We looked into, you know, his former letters and things that he wrote and found that handwriting and used it as the next logo. So I think that's the best answer that I can give you, right? Is creating this link in between, you know, the core, the foundation of the company, and then making it make sense in a format that's more relevant, more creative, maybe bolder, has allowed us to have a linear evolution from one to the other and then made sense. Our new logo, I remember a few years back, was unveiled at one of our big internal leadership meeting. And I remember the first reaction to it, because it was so different from one to the other, was pretty tough. I think a lot of our leaders not really like it, but you would have asked them 48 hours after the time that they had to absorb the shock, etc. And then, you know, they have an overwhelmingly positive answer, because as people learn the story around the creative process, understood that linear evolution and how we reached that point, they started kind of making it theirs and liking it and amplifying it, etc., and being the advocate of this transformation.
It's a really interesting lesson there, isn't it? That a lot of times when you present change and you present something, you almost have to prepare yourself that the first reaction is going to be negative.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you can't react to that. Were you prepared for that? Was it one of those moments where, okay, nobody panic, give it a while until they sit with it?
Yeah, absolutely. And to be very fair, our global colleagues and the brand teams that worked on this project and the agencies, they had anticipated many of those reactions. And also there was this very interesting decision to, each time we went through those transformations, to first communicate internally and take the time to communicate internally and have people be aware of this, and then to the market, which is interesting because, of course, the brand is how we perceive into the market. I know a lot of some of the other exercises that are being made, you know, on the market are being made the other way, because, of course, the brand is the number one way that your clients and the rest of your stakeholders interact with your company. So it's mostly considered an external asset. But at Capgemini, this is how I think we've created a lot of link around the brand and people this way.
A lot of people who work in professional services, consultants, tend to be quite skeptical. Anything that you can recall from the internal launch that you think you did well, that worked well around getting people excited without going too overboard and rah-rah? Or whatever the French version is of rah-rah.
So what I think is interesting with Get the Future You Want, our new brand signature, was that it actually was the starting point of a new conversation with the clients. And especially if you put it in the context of that transformation that we're going through in our positioning and what we want to stand for, you know, towards being that end-to-end partner. All of our sales colleagues, all of the people that were facing the clients the morning after they had, you know, a new conversation to react to or something else to bring to their clients and be like, hey, what's the future you want? What is it? How can we help you start working and start defining on how to get there, etc. So from one day to the other, the strategy of the group has been to move into that direction, and we have a wealth of capability and strengths to deliver in that direction. But how do you, from one day to the other, allow that conversation to happen, because, you know, your clients see you in a certain way and maybe not the other, and doesn't necessarily see that you've evolved and changed so much. And that new brand promise created essentially the framework to just do that, because then you have the first conversation that comes in, which is like, oh, I've seen you've launched this. What does that mean, etc.? Well, let me explain you. So I think triggering that new conversation through this promise with the customer is the best way that people can just take it and, you know, go and activate it the day after.
It's really interesting, because when you start to talk like that, you start talking about something that people can relate to, even if they're not a marketer or brand person. You're talking about conversations with customers, and you're not talking about the brand, talk about the brand itself, which might feel that's something more abstract or obtuse.
Very simple and very genius about this brand promise, to be honest, is that it's very active. We have this idea of we're going to be your end-to-end partner helping you transform. And here you have a brand promise that starts with get, and then you want, and then I think it makes a lot of sense from that perspective.
It's also customer-centric, right? Because it's not about you. It forces you to have to start conversation through each client's lens to ask them, like, what future do they want, as opposed to focusing on what it is that you offer. Once the brand is launched, that's a huge exercise initiative, but obviously it's only the start. You've been talking about the aspect of the strength of the brand and it being very active. So talk about the activation. because I think this is where the rubber hits the road. What did you do well? Tell us some of the activation stories.
What is interesting here is once you have redefined a little bit that baseline of your promise to the market, you need to kind of then translate it into how do you tell story, right? And us as a team, I think we've moved into two ways to activate around this promise. The first one is storytelling and telling stories around from the outcome and the value that we deliver to customers on their transformation journey rather than talking about ourselves. So it's been kind of being a little bit less introvert as an organization and talk a little bit more about our clients and their journey rather than just what is it that we did with them, talking to about them and how we've helped them go from a point to the other. And then the second piece is the launch of the sub-brand Capgemini Invent, which is essentially that tip of the spear creative consultancy that help encapsulate essentially the four really new elements of promise, that four things that we want to be famous for, and that helps basically create link across all of the capabilities of Capgemini. The first one is the ability to define new business model. So they essentially look into market disruptions and look into current strengths of the company, et cetera, and define business model based on this. I'm actually sitting here in the New York Applied Innovation Exchange, which is a consulting lab that does just that. We sit here, you know, for a certain number of days with our customer, look into the startup ecosystem, the competitors' moves, et cetera, and identify what's next in terms of their moves and what they can do to lead on their market and essentially define where they can win in the future. The second element of story that's important for Capgemini Invent is the ability to bring innovation at every stage of the product lifecycle. This is, I think, a very important thing for businesses today, like from design to solving complex engineering solution in connected product to scaling manufacturing and then renewable and the circular economy. I think the product, sometimes the physical product, sometimes the digital product is coming at the center of everything at the moment, and we're helping our clients on this journey. The third element is how do we help businesses not necessarily just use a new tool or move into a new platform from an IT perspective, but really operationalize digital transformation end to end. And the last one is how do we essentially not help them do a data and analytics, but make smarter decisions. So I think repositioning a lot of the way that we were telling stories and how we were bringing our customers to the mix of stories that we say is very important here. That's how we've been operationalizing it from a marketing and communication perspective.
Is there a way that what you need to do to stand out? Because obviously here, you're a French company that's in North America, and you've got the big, you'd say like the North American based incumbents that probably have a higher sort of top of mind awareness. And then you've got the upstarts, the slaloms of the world also sort of coming in as well. How can marketing or brand help distinguish in order to cut above the clutter?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the brand surveys that we do and the analysis that we do with our different survey partners or agencies show us that we've progressed in a great way, both on what we want to be known for by the people who know us and the number of people who know us. I think there is a few things that we've invested in that helped us, you know, accelerate on some of those markets. If you go on our website, you will see that, for instance, Capgemini for the last few years have really, really increased the way that he cares and invest into sports sponsorship. We are a big rugby partner, so that's very strong in Asia Pacific, very strong in Europe, a little bit less appreciated in America, but it's a growing sport. We are a big sponsor and partner of the Ryder Cup, which is golf, which we hope is going to increase and improve urban awareness in North America. And I think in each of those sports, for instance, we also bring innovation and work, you know, with the federations to improve, for instance, the fan experience through different digital tools. And we also bring our customers there to see that we are committed to the market and to see that we are investing in the brands, et cetera. And I think all of those small things and investments are helping us differentiate. You rightly pointed that we are essentially one of the largest player on the market in some of the European countries and probably a smaller player certainly in Asia Pacific. And it's partly true also in North America. I think if you want to cut through the noise, you need to be a little bit more provocative in the type of content that you push on the market, in the type of stories that you tell. And you need to make sure that you're also not being de-united, because Capgemini, if you look at our history, we have acquired a lot of organization and brought them together. Our ability to tell this story end to end, particularly at the moment, we have the tech on one side, the strategy and the transformation and the ability to transform on the other. And then more, very important, we have the engineering piece because we had an acquisition of Altran a few years back. So the ability, we are only one on the market that is able to kind of bring all of those together into one story. So our ability to kind of show that we have this differentiating important element on the market is particularly important. You know, so many of our competitors have built such capabilities, but never in the way that is so put together.
A lot of the big professional services who have made these acquisitions, for example, you talk about the acquisition of Frog, yeah. I think almost every big professional that has made some of those acquisitions, and I think a lot of them struggle sometimes because they're such different cultures and they see themselves as being special. Like, can you talk about what have been some of the pain points or struggles with some of those acquisitions? What kind of things work, and is it just a case of patience? Like, go under the hood a bit and tell us about not just the pretty picture. Great, we acquired it, now we have this great holistic thing. I know that's the marketing story, but I'm just going to challenge you just a little bit on the reality, because we know it's not that straightforward.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll give you an example. Capgemini has taken a conscious decision to keep Frog as a brand and make it not only a design brand, but make it essentially part of our promise in what we call customer first. So that's essentially proposition in terms of how do you engage better with your customers as a business. One part is design, but there's also customer experience, you know, retail experiences, of course, marketing, UX, UI, etc. So rather than just phase out Frog essentially and retain the talent, the strategy adopted in this case has been to bring under one, to integrate some parts of Capgemini Invent and other agencies into Frog to extend its value and the way that it plays a big role into our promise in this space. So I think that's been one of the answers. Many of the pains that you listed are very much present in any organizations. I think this one is particularly interesting because you see a lot of the professional services firms trying to go into this space with different level of success in doing it. I think in Asia Pacific, for instance, we acquired 5 or 6 organizations over the last 5 or 6 years. And what you'll see is because the acquisition that we acquired has this actually helped improve a lot of Capgemini recognition on the market and extend the Capgemini footprint really strongly, you know, in Australia, in Japan, in Southeast Asia. And in these cases, the decision was to kind of bring the people under the Capgemini house with one brand and not to retain their brand. So I think most of my answer is there is not one size fit all. That really depends on sometimes the quality of the brand recognition of the company you acquired, sometimes the best strategic way that the brand can actually help you differentiate yourself for the bigger ship. It's the case of Frog in customer first. And I think it's by finding that right balance that you take the right decision.
Yes, that's a good segue into like a point you said earlier, which is like in your career, you spent time in the US and then you worked in the home market in France and in Asia. Talk about a bit about what you learned from a brand building process and mentality, what you learned in having those different experiences and the different tools or strategies that you needed to deploy at a regional level.
All of those observations will be documented through also research, etc. I read a few articles from Harvard Business Review on this topic actually last year, but the business, it really depends on the nature of business and the size of the market. Many of the Asia Pac itself is an archipelago of different markets and different businesses that all have very, very different ways of working, very different ways of positioning a brand, very different ways to enter and make yourself relevant. It's very documented that very often, you know, for instance, in Southeast Asia or in China, the relationship is one part that is a lot more important in the way that the relationship over time, particularly important. Whereas here in the US, you will really have a brand-led business. So people know about you, they reach out to you, they've just see your ad, then they connect with you, etc. So in the way that you invest, for instance, in sports sponsorship, that's particularly important. We expanded our brand. We had the exercise of expanding our brand recognition in around Asia. We invested in Rugby 7, which has many different, very famous in Asia, but not too much in the US, competition around the geography. One in Hong Kong that is called the Hong Kong Sevens that is very famous. One in Australia, was in Singapore, and one in Dubai, which was part of that geography for us. And the way that we invested into it was very much focused on building relationships. So basically bringing people under one roof, clients, prospects, third-party partners, etc., and having them have an experience of the Capgemini brand where they could mingle and network with our key leaders and sales folks, of course. And one iteration of the game after the other, people were getting to know each other. Very interestingly, when we look at sponsorships of sports right now with the Rugby World Cup in Europe, with the Ryder's Cup, there is, for other geographies, there is, of course, this element of relationship, but also how many times is the brand going to be placed, where it's going to be, and a lot more around the visibility. So I think that's one of the many different things that we could see in terms of how do you adapt your tactics and your strategy to different cultures.
So thanks. Let's jump to just a few things about your sort of personal journey and growth. One of the things I thought was really interesting is when you were telling the story about going to Asia, that was completely opportunistic. It's not like somebody came and called you and tapped you up. You went for it. Talk a bit about that and how important that is, you think, just as a sort of general principle of career. Like, has that always been a part of your attitude that's helped you get there? And have there been times where you've done that and maybe you've fallen flat on your face? You know, it doesn't always work out like that.
Yeah, one of the seven values of Capgemini is boldness. And this is something that the company tries to live by. So I really think that I'm very lucky to be in an environment that has actually been looking for this type of move, this type of raising your hand and trying to do something new. So I always look at my team, for instance, and at people that I manage or that I coach or some of my mentee as well. And I tell them, thinking out of the box, kind of completely turning the table is usually the way to go, you know. And I think that's also related to the conversation we had around get the future you want, the ability to always challenge your stakeholders, the people you work with, the leaders, sometimes very senior that you work with, and make them think a little bit differently about something is always going to be seen positively. I had a professor in my MBA class that spent a lot of time demonstrating us by A plus B a few years back that in competition and pitching competition, the project that is always coming up with the boldest solution always win. It doesn't matter if it's the most feasible or if it's innovative, and if you have managed not only the boldest solution, but if you have managed to make the person that listened to you think about a problem differently, you've won. And that's usually how you win in those pitching competitions, etc.
Yeah,
and I remember this very, very, and I remember this very vividly. The feasibility element, of course, is very important. That comes next. If you start thinking about a project differently, you've won. And so I will always encourage people to do so. I think it's mostly brought me further, especially in a market where Capgemini was nascent and trying to boost itself around Asia Pacific, try different things, sometimes fail, sometimes succeed. That's really the luck that you have when you are part of a large organization that is expanding somewhere. It's your startup, so not big, you don't have huge means, but you can be a little bit bold, you can fail and start something else, etc. So that has been extremely lucky for me early on in my career.
What do you think that having had some of this global experience and gone to work in different markets has sort of been able to help you on a day-to-day?
It completely expands your horizon in terms of the way that you think. You become very, when in your daily life, which is your private life, you are constantly challenged, cultural shock by not being able to do paperwork, by not being able to understand, you know, how things work, being, you know, sometimes insecure about your visa and things like this, completely outside of your comfort zone. That expands your horizon. You're a lot more tolerant. You're a lot more open to new ideas. You're thinking differently because you constantly have to find solutions for yourself. And then you bring some of these elements into your work and do the same thing. And you have a lot more cultural awareness, a lot more empathy. And we know how much empathy is extremely important as marketers in order to be able to tell stories that simply resonate. And I think that's very rich, actually. That's a wealth and a strength that you acquire. So I've always tried, under the guidance of my parents, from the earlier age, try to get myself out of my comfort zone and do all of those things. Been privileged to do it in a very comfortable situation. But when I looked at a resume today, or when I look at the ability of somebody to get into a new job, etc., I will always look at, have they worked sometimes overseas? Have they studied sometimes overseas? Have they done something a little bit different, volunteering somewhere or something like this, because that will tell you a lot about the ability of the person to be adaptable, bring new solution to the table, think sometimes differently. In a business that is hyper-changing, particularly in technology and transformation, we need people that are able to not always know the answers, not always come up with the answers, but be adaptable and at least have the faculty to look at a problem and think about it in a few different ways.
Do you have a favorite interview question that you like to use when you're evaluating candidates that help bring that to life? So beyond looking at the resume, seeing where they've been.
It's nothing special. I think many people do it, but I always spend the last 10 to 15 minutes of an interview to ask people about what they do outside of work. How do they spend their time? What are they passionate about? It can be anything. But if you talk about it in a certain way and you show the passion, etc., that can tell you a lot about an ability of somebody to tell story and an ability of somebody to a marketing team to be creative and bring those. So I usually like to dedicate at least 10 or 15 minutes of the interview around going a little bit more into the one-on-one connection. I'm also somebody who believe very much in the value of relationship and the value of having fun at work. So being with people that are going to be bringing different types of passions, different types of interest, and that we click with at work is very important to creating a strong team. So that's the reason why I'm asking these interview questions.
How do you stay fresh and current with what's going on in, or more specifically, if we think about marketing and brand?
Yeah. So one of the things working at Capgemini Invent and, you know, with in this agency world that we're bringing together is that we are, it will be the same for our competitors, at least for many of them, but we are in a business where people around us are brilliant. They are smart. They worked on the most interesting challenges for the customers, brought to life a concept from end to end. And so staying current, I read the press, I listen to podcasts, etc. But having those conversations with my colleagues in strategy and consulting is really where I stay up to date. Sometimes it's a little bit frustrating because I feel I'm not necessarily keeping up at the same pace, but you learn a lot from this. And for me, that has been what's really rich about my job. We work with designers, engineers, strategists, and that's really something that I value a lot.
And favorite podcast or book that you've read recently that you find yourself like writing stuff down or that influences you?
There is a podcast that I listen to that is called Marketing Trends, organized by mission.org. And it's interviewing different CMOs that have different problems and issues. And I really enjoy the content and listen to it on a very regular basis. Tend to use my free time for kind of disconnecting from work and doing some other things as well. So I can't say that I'm spending a lot of reading time, reading through business books. Yeah, I prefer novels, but personal
it's refreshing honesty. and reminds us of the European origin, right? One of the best phrases that I listen a lot to Scott Galloway, and he always says that the US is the best place to make money, but the Europe is the best place to spend money because they know how to live.
Possibly true, yeah.
FX, this is brilliant. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, Gabriel. Appreciate it.
That's all for today's episode. We hope these insights from top brand leaders help you as you face your own branding roadblocks. Remember that you're not alone in the challenges you face, and there are always impactful, creative, and human ways to solve brand problems. If you would like to further connect with fellow elite brand leaders and join our community, send an email to gcohen@monogle.com. Thank you for joining us. See you on the next one.